Well, we start a new book today. Well, sort of. It was one book, and the Christians broke it up into two.
Oh.
That just made it easier for them to, you know, to organize. And what happened was that they used to call us in for debates. It says in Isaiah, you know, this, and so in order to know what they were talking about, we had to divide our books to communicate with the Christians. And so after a while, we started using a Shmuel Beis. It doesn't hurt to call it Shmuel Beis, but there really is no Shmuel Beis. It's just one Shmuel kind of thing. That's why we didn't make a party, although we could, you know. Yeah. So Shmuel was written until the first book was written by Shmuel, and then the second book was written by, I want to say, the prophet that lived at the time of David. I think it was Nathan Hanavi. That's what I want to say.
How did Shmuel know all the things that were going on if he didn't? I mean, he was at a distance for a while.
Well, the prophet, he was called a seer, so he saw it all. Yeah. I think so. It doesn't say here in the beginning of this one. Okay. Make sure this is going. Okay, here we go. Shmuel Beis, chapter Aleph. So, we mentioned the death of Shaul. And we also talked a little bit about suicide, which Judaism is very much against suicide. Under limited circumstances, it is acceptable. And there's a discussion about what those limited circumstances would be. Perhaps here, where he feared that he would be tortured and he'd be used in a way that would be would profane Hashem's name. The Jewish children that were took the most beautiful and handsome Jewish children on the boat at the destruction of the temple, and they were going to be brought to the houses of prostitution, and they jumped off the boat rather than being used for sin. And so there is an idea that under certain circumstances it's better to take one's life than to live a life of sin and because these things are life and death, it's not something that's easily decided. We're not in charge of our own lives, so we have no right to take them away. If Hashem gives us a life, and it's not really up to us to decide, well, we don't want it. We don't even sit shiva for somebody typically that commits suicide. There are times when there's mental illness involved and there's other things, but the discussion does center around what Shaul did. He's not criticized for taking his life. We don't find in the Tanakh, which is very critical of anybody that slips up, and they don't hesitate to criticize him for what he did with Amalek and what he did with Nov. He's not criticized for taking his life, and so if we understood the circumstances, then we would understand under what other, you know, what other cases would be similar to that. But the simple of it is that he thought that if he were captured alive, people would say that here's the king of Israel, the prophet, and he'd be hung up in front of the idols, and it would profane Hashem's name. It would look as if Hashem didn't protect his holy people, and it would just they might force him to do things that would not be appropriate, and so he felt that he had to take his life, and he felt that there was no way he would be let to live anyways. And so there is a debate about Masada, by the way, whether that was appropriate or not. It's not for us really to judge people, but we just have to be aware that it's a complicated issue. It's a complicated issue, and certainly for the most part, we would not under normal conditions expect people to take their own lives that Hashem had given to them. And in fact, we're going to see that Shaul's armor bearer refused to do it, if you remember. And we're going to see another version of this what happened in the final moments. What's interesting is that many times after somebody dies in battle, it's difficult to get the story, what really happened. And we're going to find there's another version coming up real quick of something that we just read about the final moments of Sheol. And the question is, what's the true version? So we'll see in a moment. So let's see.
Mm-hmm. Is the question of taking one's life at, or living in terrible pain, does that come under discussion? Is that...
As far as we know, if a person is suffering, we're still not allowed to take their life. That would be murder, to kill someone if they're. On the other hand, to keep the life going longer, to take efforts to keep the person to that it could be you don't have to do. In other words, it's one thing to pull the plug; it's another thing not to put the person on the plug, not to put them on the machine. So, and there's a discussion about that in the Talmud as well. So typically, just because a person is in a lot of pain, we don't say let's put them out of their misery. That would be like playing God. That would be not appropriate. On the other hand, if there are different considerations about whether we would take a heroic act to keep the person alive longer. There is some question about that. But he after Moshe, it was after the death of Sheol, the David Shov Mehakos es Amalek. Now there's an irony here. Sheol died because he didn't want to destroy Amalek, and now David, his successor, just finishes destroying Amalek. And so it's almost like it's showing us the difference between the two. Sheol lost the monarchy because he refused to, couldn't bring himself to destroy Amalek. And then David was willing to wage that battle. V'yashiv David v'siklo yom ishan. And David was in Siklo for 2 days. V'hibi yom ha-shlishi, on the third day. Now, obviously, David and his men were worried about their family, their people back in the land of Israel. And they knew this war was going on. And a person comes from the camp from Me'im Sheol, from the camp of Sheol. Ubagadav Kruyim. And his clothes are torn. That's not a good sign. Ba'adoma Rosh, and he's got earth on his head. Those are signs of mourning. Vehi bevoa David, and they brought him, he came to David, of Yipo Arza Vishtachvu, and he bowed down to David. So this is somebody from the camp of Sheol. And Sheol was the old king, and now he's seemingly showing allegiance to David as the new king. The Yamala David, Amizah Tava, where are you coming from? Where are you from? The person looked very dazed and weary, and he said, Memachan Yisrael Nimlati. He said, I've escaped from the camp of the Jewish people. The Yamala David, Mahaya Dover, what happened? Hagid and Ali, please tell me. Vayomar, he said, what happened in the battle? So he said, Asher Nasa Amin Melchama. Now this is a well-known truth. If the soldiers run away, the battle's lost. Whoever flees first. Once the people are in panic mode, then the battle is lost. That's the beginning of the loss of a battle. If people aren't into the fight and they start getting scared, they start looking over their back, planning the escape route. So the loss of this battle was not because the Plishtim were more mighty than us. We had won other battles. We already saw that Sheol was afraid of the sins, that Hashem wouldn't protect him. And the people also were in a similar situation, and they ran away. They didn't feel worthy of that to win this battle. Asher nosa'am min ha-melchama. The people ran away from the war. The gam harbel nafal min ha'am. And unfortunately, there were many casualties. V'yamusu, and also, who else died? Gam Sheol. Sheol died, v'yonasan b'no mesu. And Yonasan, his son, also died. Bad news. Really bad news. Okay. V'yomer David Elanar Hamagilo. Now, we have a rule. We don't like to be the bearer of bad news. We don't consider that a good thing. In fact, we try not to break bad news directly. When we have bad news, sometimes people need to know bad news for important reasons. We try to beat around the bush. In other words, we try not to. We try to let them figure it out. In other words, we say, you know, so and so who is sick. It's not good news. And they say, well, you know, it was why? Because good people are worthy to bring good news. And if we would merit it, we wouldn't have to have bad news. And we always wish on people that we should always wish for better times. We always wish to be the bearer of good tidings. it's no fun to be the bearer of bad tidings. And somehow it's necessary sometimes, but we wish that it wouldn't have to be necessary. So when it is necessary, in order to show that we realize that it's in the hands of Hashem, and that we hope that we next time won't have to bring the bad news, we, like we said, we try not to say it directly. We try to let people figure it out, rather than that they look to us to be the ones that have made people very upset. In other words, let's say a person, you know, lost a close relative or a close friend, or so we don't want to be the vehicle to cause a person pain or suffering. On the other hand, that person needs to know. They need to make plans. So it's appropriate, that's where email comes in handy or whatever, maybe that's not the way to break it to the person. Sometimes the person needs someone for support. But the only thing is, in order to show that we don't relish the idea of putting a person in pain, and we don't like to announce bad news, there are certain people that seem to like to bring bad news. It's funny, they seem to like the, they just like to, they like to, people to, as long as they can tell them something they don't know, there are certain people that just like to broadcast, they like, did you hear, you know, the so-and-so. What?
The shock value.
The shock value, right. And we really don't like to be the bearer of bad news. So even though sometimes we have to, in order to show that we really don't want to make the people feel the pain, so we would try to say it in the indirect fashion if possible. And then it's okay if the person fully understands what you mean. You know, I don't have such good news. So-and-so was very sick, they didn't make it or whatever it is, or we need to make arrangements or however it's said, we do try to avoid bringing bad news. So we're going to see right away, why is this person bringing the bad news and so excited to run to bring the bad news to David HaMelech? So, Let's read on further. Perhaps we'll get to it. So, verse 5. V'yomer David el Anara Magilo. So David said to the lad that told him, Eich yadata ki mei shov v'yonasim. How do you know? How do you know they died? How are you so sure? V'yomer Anar Hamagilo nikra nikresi. He says, well, I just happened to be there. Just happened to be at the place on Mount Gilboa. V'nei shol nishan al chaniso. And he says that Shol was leaning on his spear. Now, most people learn that he was leaning on a spear. That's when he killed himself. So there is a question here. Is this another version of the same thing that happened? Or is this something that he made up? There are two different views. One view is that this person wanted to take the credit for killing Shaul so that he would be rewarded for, because he would be, in effect, crowning David. And he thought that David would be thrilled that Shaul was dead. Now that Shaul was dead, that was David's enemy. If you remember, the Plishtim all thought that Shaul was this big enemy of the... Shaul was out to get David. So he thought by his having killed Shaul that he would be rewarded, and therefore he makes up this story. That's one view. There's another view that he didn't make up the story, there was just more to the story. In other words, Shaul killed himself. It's not so easy for a person to kill oneself. Because, you know, when they take the sword and they fall on the sword, it's not so easy to fall on the sword in a way to kill oneself. We'll see in a second, it could be this is what happened. He said that Shaul was leaning on his spear. It could be that and that the Plishtim were getting very close. They were coming on all sides. And I turned away, like this was not a... This was not a pleasant scene. But Uranium, he saw me and he said, "Vyomer, here I am. Vyomer le miata, who are you?" Now it's very strange because it almost like Shaul was in behind a rock or in a protective area, and the Plishtim, you know, were shooting up, and he had his armor bearer there, and people were in different pockets. It's almost not like we picture it, you know, with like an army behind him. He was in this one pocket. And he had tried to kill himself because he felt that the Plishtim were surrounding him and eventually they would get close enough to conquer them. So the Yomer, he said to him, who are you? Miata, what are you? He saw he wasn't a Plishti and he said, Amaleki Anoki, I'm an Amalek. Now, we'll see that he was descended from Amalek. V'yomer elav, amanoa lai masen. He said, do me a favor, kill me. You know, do me a, you know, please. Shaul was trying to kill himself, and apparently he wasn't successful. And if you remember, his Jewish armor bearer couldn't bring himself to do it. That's not our way to put a person out of their misery or to give them. So he thought, maybe this guy's an Amaleki. You can always count on an Amaleki to kill someone. You know, that's the they're good for that. So he says that there's two views of what this word shavitz means. One view is that he was going to die anyways. In other words, that he was in his last moments and he was suffering. The other view is the shavitz is like an armor. And they had body armor, and when Shaul fell on his sword, the body armor protected him, so it wasn't so easy to kill him, because the sword got stuck in the body armor. So, Kikol od nafshibi, he's still around. So that's what he claims that Shaul had asked him. V'yamad olav, and he stood over him, v'yamisayan, he killed him. Ki yadati ki lo yechia, because I knew that he wasn't going to make it after he had fallen. And I took the crown that's on his head, the Esta Asher, I took the royal bracelet, and here we are, Vavimel, and you are the successor, and I brought them to you. Now give me my reward. That's basically what he was after. So again, one view is he made up this whole story. He thought he'd get a bigger reward if he was the one that killed Shaul with his hands. Now David had no way of knowing whether it was true or not, but he did have the royal crown. This was the royal crown and the royal... These were things that only Shaul would have had. And again, the other view is that perhaps this did really happen.
Is there the word sword and spear interchangeable here? They keep using sword and then spear and then sword.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. It's a sharp thing. We don't know exactly if it's our terms or the... Yeah.
But it would seem to fall on its... I don't know. It would seem easier if it were a spear rather than a sword, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't know either how sharp it was. So this, when he showed, apparently David was not convinced. Now that's the thing about a person who's a liar. You can tell, you know, you never know what they're saying is really true. And that's perhaps why David asked him all these questions, because he saw this guy was enjoying, and he went and he killed him. And here, like he obviously was a show off in a certain way, was enjoying this role that he had. But once he showed David the actual artifacts from Shaul, then he became convinced it was true. And that's why David at this point rips Kriya. That's why, because he's convinced that that Shaul was killed. One view is that the head, this thing that goes on the head and the arms, there's a Gemara that says that these were Shaul's tefillin. That these were it says they took the thing, the crown of the Jew is the tefillin. That's what we wear when we show that the name of Hashem is upon us, and a Jew is crowned. It's a mark of royalty that we have the tefillin. And so that's the one on the arm is like a bracelet, and so it says that he took the tefillin of Shaul HaMelech and brought them to David. So when David saw this, David tore his clothing. We talked about the idea that typically a person only rips when they have a close relative pass away. They only do kriya for a close relative. There are occasions where if a person has a king or a rebbe or a very close, certain very close relationship where they would also do kriya. There's also idea when a person sees the land of Israel destroyed, like when they go to visit the coastal the first time, or that they also do a kriya, because it's there's a few things with kriya. One is that when something is torn and it's sewn, it's the idea that it doesn't go back the same way. It's never new again. And there's the idea that the loss won't be in vain, that we won't forget this loss. That's one of the ideas of a tear. There's also an idea that death is not something pleasant. We don't control it. It's like all of a sudden that person is ripped away from us. They're no longer in our lives. And so it's a very painful thing. But a rip signifies that this person is in a certain way like pulled away from us, is no longer and we also view that when something happens that's close to us, whether it be our people or our land or our king or our relative, when that shouldn't happen to any of nobody, we should only have happy things. But if a person has it, so there's the idea that it's very close to a person. In other words, that if somebody has a when somebody's mourning, there's the idea that the death has come, the angel of death has come very close to that person. And we know that a person doesn't want to get very close to the angel of death, because when he's, the angel of death is busy reviewing people's records and doing his mission, sometimes once he's there, he could affect others. And so there's a certain aspect of mourning that a person is like kind of worried that the angel of death got so close. And so that's also the idea of creating a ripping, and there are all kinds of ideas there. But David was showing that he felt the fact that Shaul was killed was not a reason for him to celebrate, even though he was a refugee, and even though his existence was terrible. I mean, just think what happened. His family was just captured, and he's living with the plishtim, and the plishtim suspect him of not being loyal, and he's having to fight this hidden existence, and things would be so much easier if Shaul died. So you would think he would say, Shaul died, great, you know, all right, you know, it's about time. But he felt the opposite. He was able to see the greatness of Shaul, and he felt legitimately that we should tear him. Not only David felt that way, also all the people with him. So it's interesting. They were refugees from Shaul. They were on the most wanted list, yet they felt a love for him. They felt loyal to him. It just shows you, to some extent, the greatness of Shaul, that they felt that close to him, that here they were refugees from him, and when they heard the news, they all felt personally like they had to mourn. V'yisbedu, and they said the speeches, v'yivku, and they cried, v'yitzamu, and they fasted until the evening al Shaul. Now, this wasn't just on Shaul. This was a triple tragedy. There was Shaul, al Yonason beno, and Yonason was a great person as well. Valam Hashem, and finally all the people killed in the battle. This word, by the way, is used in a lot of our Slichos prayers. We have on Tisha B'Av and other times when we lament different tragedies, we say these words, Al-Am Hashem, Al-Beis Yisrael, the house of Israel, Ki Nafu B'Charav. This was a sad moment. This was our first king, and he had not been king very long, and it was just sad that he had to die this way. Okay.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that the concept of when someone dies is that when something is destroyed, it won't be new again.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have the concept of resurrection. I was wondering don't we say that we will be new again?
That's true, but that's a different time. In other words, in our current existence, we're going to live with that loss. So that's the, part of the Kaddish prayer is that eventually Hashem's name will be sanctified and we'll be reunited with our loved ones, and in eternity we'll be reunited. And we're going to even mention that here. But that's in the long term. In long term, we do get reunited with our loved ones. But in the short term, we're lonely. We miss them. That's kind of the V'yomer David Amnat. So now David turns to the one that only first they mourn the news. He didn't want to get too involved with what to do with this person. So now David now calls this Nar HaMagid the storyteller. He says, "Ey Mizata, who are you?" V'yomer Ben Ish Ger Amaleki. Now this time he doesn't say I'm an Amaleki. He says I'm Jewish, but I'm a convert from the Amalekim. There's a question whether that's appropriate or not. Now, there is some people that say there's a mitzvah to kill Amalekim, and that could be why David does them. And other people feel that if he's a convert, maybe there's no mitzvah. There was a famous convert that was with Shaul. It was one of his advisors. His name was Doeg. And he was the one that had killed the city of the Kohanim. And he was the one that always accused David of being disloyal and was always jealous of David. Some people say that this Ger HaMolek was this Doeg, that was this person that, as long as Shaul was alive, he was hung around him. As soon as Shaul died, then he wanted to go to David and flatter him. There are certain people that are like that. Whoever is in power, that's the one who they run to and they try to flatter. And so some people say this was that Doeg. if you say that there was no mitzvah for David to kill him because he's an Amaleki, so then the question is why David is going to do what he's going to do. Let's see what David says. Verse 14, B'yomei love David. David says to him, Eich lo yiresi, how come you weren't afraid? L'shlach yadka l'shachis is Mashiach Hashem. How come you weren't afraid to be the one to take the sword to kill the anointed of Hashem? Now, it's interesting. I wonder if the person had said, I didn't know what to do. I told Shaul, are you sure you want me to do this? If he had expressed any regret about doing it, maybe David would have felt different. But he bragged about it. He enjoyed the role. He was the one that killed Shaul, you know, like the, and now he's coming to the true king, and here's the throne. So it was something about how he said it. Again, we didn't hear him say it, but we have to look at the words. He says, how come that didn't bother you?
If it had been Doeg, wouldn't David have known that it was Doeg?
It could be, but Doeg now was trying to get on David's good side. David might not have known everything Doeg had said against him. But he said, how come it didn't bother you? So David called one of his people and he said, Gosh, now, it could be that David had a conference. There is a rule that a king is allowed to have judgment on his own. King does not have to have a court case necessarily to prosecute. King is allowed to make decisions for the benefit of the country. Sometimes kings abuse that. But David decided that he deserved to die, the Yamus, and they killed him. Mm-hmm. So now, you don't usually kill the bearer of bad tidings. So you could say he was an Amaleki, you have to kill Amaleki. You could say that. You could say that this was Doeg, and David knew he was guilty. Mm-hmm. There are other things here. David was going to go back to the land of Israel, and he was eventually going to be king. And in the Gentile world, if you were on the old monarchy and there was a new monarchy, the old monarchy would be the first one to be wiped out because they would be a potential for rebellion to put up because they were from the old monarchy. So it was quite common that when a new king came in that they would execute all of the people from the old family. And if people wanted to get on the good side of the new king, they would expedite that. Because as soon as there was a new king or a new party of power, they would try to show that they were on their side by proving that they were going to execute the people on that. Unfortunately, in the communists, in the times of Stalin, there were many Jews that tried to prove their loyalty to Stalin by persecuting their fellow Jews. And it didn't help. They eventually were sent to the Siberia anyways. But the terrible persecution in Russia started with Jews who were trying to prove that they were so loyal to the communist ideal that they went ahead and finked on Jews that were praying and finked on the rabbi and finked on the other people that tried to... and they actually created a part of the Russian government to destroy the Jewish religion. I think it was called the Yevseka. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. They had a whole... This was in the times of the former Soviet Union. David was afraid that people would try to wipe out Shaul's family or to get on his good side or would see them as a threat to David's monarchy. And so in order to show people that this was not the behavior of the Jewish kingdom, that we don't go around killing... So he set an example that he said over here what he did was, and this is a pretty strong example, he kills him. That this is the first time in the Torah that we see, I mean, the first time that David has to kill somebody. And you remember there were plenty of opportunities, at least a fellow Jew or the David as a king, he wants to show that he's not going to tolerate people that are bloody. He's not going to tolerate... one of the things that... one of the downfalls of the Jewish kings happened in the times of the Second Temple with the Hashmonaim, it got very bloody. There were all these coups where they were killing one another and the Herod, and they were killing their families, and there were these terrible civil wars between one brother and another brother. David's monarchy was not known to have that, where they would kill the people of the old party or the other party or the because David didn't tolerate that. And so he was saying from the very get-go that he would tolerate other opinions, that he would tolerate that he's not going to have people killing somebody in order to get on his good graces. That doesn't work with him. And he respects the other side. He respects Joel, and he understood that Joel was chosen for his job by Hashem. So, V'yomei lev David, David damer, he says, you killed yourself. It's your kipichanav, it's what, according to you, were at Lamer, anoy masasi es Mashiach Hashem. You said, I killed the Mashiach. You said you killed the Mashiach, so you forfeited your life. So that's the end of what, again, it's discussed. It's a little bit of a puzzle, because we don't know all the details, but those are some of the things that are said. So now, David is going to say a few words about the kingship, the loss of this battle. They called David as a kinazos avshol, and David says this, and we believe there is this concept known as a kina. They sometimes translate it as a dirge, or it's like a sad song or a sad speech. It's a little bit like a eulogy, but in some ways it was like a poem or a chant that was done. And we read these typically on Tisha B'Av, but this was the kina that David said. Sometimes the words, when they're a little bit poetic and when they have a certain rhyme to them, they have a stronger effect than just a speech. And they had songs that they would sing, and they would have like a drum beat, and they had different, they had mourning down to a certain science, and they had professional people they would hire to help people cry. They had criers that would come and cry at funerals, and The only thing I could say is that we sometimes are not very emotional, or we don't know how to stir up our emotions, and we really want to. Like sometimes we want to have a worthy person dies, and we want to feel the emotions, and we're just so made of stone, or we hear about so many bad things, and we after a while they just don't affect us so much, you know. And so it's a good thing if people know how to have the proper reactions and emotions. And but one of the things that David did was he composed a kina on this sad poem for this occasion, and it was on Shaul and on Yonasan V'yomar, and he said the following. This is divinely inspired, otherwise it wouldn't be written here. Whenever we have poetry or songs like this, there's a big challenge to figure them out. We had a few of them, we had happy songs like the Shiras. The words are very hard because it's written with like a divine message. So here too, it takes a little bit to try to figure out what he was referring to. So he starts out like this. He says, "Yomer lamid b'nei Yehuda keshes." He says, "You know what? We better figure out how to fight." So many people say that as long as Shaul was alive, we had security; we didn't have to worry. But now that he's gone, Shaul was the first monarch, and he was from the tribe of Benjamin. And the next monarch would come from Yehuda. And the main fighting would have to come from Yehuda. Yehuda was the leadership. And so what David was saying is that those days where we didn't have to worry about armies and equipment and fighting are gone. We're going to have to learn war now. And we have to appreciate what it was to have Shaul taking care of that. We've got to learn the bow. It's written in the good book. Now, what's the good book? Some people say the good book is the book of Chumash, where it said that Yehuda, Yaakov Avinu on his deathbed, said that Yehuda would eventually be the leader. So what David was doing was he was telling people that now would be the time when the leadership of the Jewish people would pass to the tribe of Judah. And they would, so in effect he was saying that with the death of Shaul passes that era. Don't think that it's going to come from the house of Benjamin anymore. Now he says, "Hatzvi Yisrael." The Jewish people is—it's very interesting. Anybody know what "tzvi" means?
Deer.
A deer. Sometimes it's a nickname for the Jewish people. It's called a deer. A deer is very fast, very quick. It could be he was saying the Jewish people usually have this ability to be very quick, and he's puzzled how we lost this battle. He's puzzled how Shaul, who was the, when you say a person is quick like a deer, it means they have a sixth sense. He's saying the Jewish people that's like a deer on a high place. In other words, they actually were, when you're on a high place, you're in a better, you have a better war strategy. You should be able to fight well. Hey, Knuffel, how could we lose this battle? The kina that we say in Tisha B'Av is called Eicha. Also, it's a wonder. How could it happen? And so part of what it is that we have to look at ourselves and say, how could it happen? What did we do that we lost divine protection? Eich Nafel Gibon, how did our mighty ones fall? So that's what he says over here. How could such a mighty person fall? Al Chagida Begas, he says, you better not let the Plishtim know. In other words, he had heard who had been killed, but perhaps it hadn't been found out by the Plishtim. So don't let them know, because as long as we had Shaul, we didn't have to be afraid of the Plishtim. But Al Tavazu, don't let them find out in Gas Nashkelon, Pes Tismachna Benos Plishtim, lest the daughters of the Plishtim, they will rejoice. That means that they can start their terrorist battles against it. Pendelo Benos Erelim, and the daughters of the uncircumcised will rejoice. Hari Gilboa, now he wants to say that the fact that Shaul was killed on these mountains, that's a bad place for us. This was bad news. So it almost like it shouldn't rain on those mountains anymore. That's an expression like, Al Tal, no more rain, no more dew. Al Matar, Alechem, Estai Chumas, Kisham Nigo Mokin Yiborim. How could it be that our shield, our protection, our great monarch, our first king that was such a good defender of Jewish people, how could it be that he died on this mountaintop? Mugin Shaw Bali Meshua B'Shemen. Now, they used to oil their shields. Apparently, if you have a nice oiled shield, the arrows fall off. Because if you oil it, it slips. So, he was saying that it's almost like the shield that Shaul had didn't work. It didn't make sense. In other words, how is it that our defenses didn't hold? Midam Chalol and Mechev Giborim Keshes. Somehow we weren't protected from the downfall of the many that were killed. And Yonasan, who was our great hero, what happened to his bow and arrow? He used to pull out his arrow. If you remember, he single-handedly won battles before. Shaul, when he would fight, he never turned back empty-handed. And so David, who had been to so many battles with Shaul and Yonasan, and Hashem was on their side, and they were so heroic, how did it happen that this battle, they just didn't work? The 1-2 combination of Shaul and Yonasan, the great heroes that they were, somehow this battle was not meant to be. Now some beautiful words here that we actually sometimes mention something similar in some of our memorial prayers. Shaul and Yonasan, hanahavim v'ane'imim b'chayehem, they were beloved and pleasant when they were alive. U'b'mosam lo nipardu, and in death they won't depart. Now it means that we won't forget them. We believe that people don't, you know, they don't die in vain. We don't forget them. But it also means that Shaul and Yonasan were close. If we learned before that even though they argued about David, if you remember, because Yonasan was close to David, but they were a pair. They were very close, father and son. Yonasan was on the right, and so just like we have an idea that just like in a person's lifetime, they're together with their relatives, when in the world of truth, people are reunited. So he says that David and Yonasan are together, just like they were together in this world, they died together, and they'll be together in the next world. It's not because they were unwilling to fight or unwilling. They were light like eagles. Right? It took an amazing strength to go into battle knowing that they would probably die. They could have tried to run away. The Medrash says that they were thinking about running away, but they were told that if they ran away, they wouldn't get the world to come. If they died defending the Jewish people, then they'd atone for their sins. That was kind of the message that they had. So they willingly fought the last battle knowing that they wouldn't come out alive, and that's a great strength. That takes great gevurah. But no Yisrael al Shaul, and the daughters of Israel. Now, why the daughters of Israel, not the men of Israel? It really means both. But the women, when the country is not secure, feel it even more strong than men. Is either because they're more nervous or because the country would be more open to terrorist raids and their husbands would be away fighting. And so the daughters of Israel would cry. They felt the lack of security. We find that Shaul was very much concerned about the men and women of the country, and that he brought riches, he brought nice clothing. It's interesting, it almost seems like he while the men were at war, he made sure that their wives and their families were well taken care of, that they had nice clothing. We don't really know that much about this clothing, but that's what the Mephoshim say, that he somehow took care of the women. He took care of wanted to make sure that while the men were at the front, the women would be well cared for. That's something, you know, that in this country we have a lot of private organizations that try to help the wives of the soldiers and and they have a hard time because their husbands, so the thing is, you know, we tend not to feel so bad for them because it's voluntary, but it's still, if you know someone whose husband's away in war and fighting, it's a very big challenge. It's a very sensitive person who cares for the relatives of those that are out to war. So Shaul was described as that kind of kink, as sensitive to the people. Then he repeats himself, a nafal giborim. I really hate these sad, you know, sad pride, but we always believe, hazorim bedima, if you plant with tears, then you'll reap with joy. And so when we look at the tragedies, so then we can come to appreciate what comes out of the tragedies. Eit nafal giborim b'socha melchama. So again, he says, how could the great people die in war? Yonason Abba, and especially Yonason. Now, finally, he makes a personal thing. He says, sarli alecha, he says, I'm so pained, personally, by the loss of Yonason, my brother Yonason. Namti li miod. You were so pleasant to me. They were so such a great friendship. Niflesi avoska li me'avas nashim. Our love was greater than love of women. Some people say, like, that he was usually the one a person loves the most in the world is their spouse. But usually that's based on a husband and wife take care of each other. And with Yonason, they cared about each other even though it was counter to their own needs. In other words, Yonason's caring for David meant that the kingdom would not go to Yonason. So that's even greater than one cares for one's spouse because you care for each other and you help each other. But the love that they had for one another was even greater than that. That was even though they wouldn't help one another, even though by helping each other they were helping the enemy, so to speak, they still cared about each other. Other people say it was just in general, the people say they love this one, they love that one. Sometimes our greatest love is reserved for women, or for they were saying that they were bound up, their souls were bound up to each other. There was a special connection between David and Yonason. How could the mighty ones have fallen? They were our weapons. Our weapons were the great heroes that we had. So that's the end of David's song about Shaul. And to some extent, that's the end of the discussion of Shaul. We might have a little bit that will come up later. And that's really the end of the first book, is the first monarch, great person, and with all the faults, with all of the paranoia and all the mistakes that he made, he was as a king, he was dedicated to his people, and so that's the. And we see that David, even though David himself was harmed by Shaul, didn't let it tarnish his respect for them. So that's the amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.